This session is from the 2021 Shepherd's 360 International Church Leaders Conference. For more information, visit shepherds360.org.
We're going to get up and started. Others can certainly walk in, and we're a couple minutes early, but you guys are here. Thank you for coming. My name is David Gibbs, and let me just ask, is anybody here hearing me for the first time in your life? Let me see, like, brand new. Okay, pleasure. Good to meet you. Number of guys through the middle. I'll just give you a quick nutshell. I'm an attorney. I have the pleasure of working with an organization called the National Center for Life and Liberty. I gave you a pen and a card, so you have that to take with you. And we provide legal services to churches, nonprofits, religious organizations. We have a simple mantra, maximum ministry with minimal liability. And by the way, how many would like to do more, not less for God? But let's do it in a way to avoid unnecessary liability. And so that's what we do. I am honored to serve with Dr. Davey in a number of capacities here with the seminary and Wisdom from Heart, and also with the church here as their legal counsel. So I'm certainly thrilled to be here as part of 360. This particular workshop is geared around times have changed in America. And by the way, how many figured out times have changed in America? I mean, we're living in a whole new world of areas. And to be very honest, while we're going to have 30 to 45 minutes together, we could talk for days about some of the changes that we've seen in our country, whether it's the definitions, whether it's the attitudes, whether it's the mindsets, whether it's what you're wrestling with. But for this workshop, we're going to hit just some of the high spots, some of the things that you all are dealing with and working through. And then it is interactive. So if you have a question or if I say something, you go, hey, I want to ask on that. Feel free to do so. And again, I won't run out of here at 4:45. You may want to for dinner, but I will gladly stay till everybody's questions are answered. And then also our ministry is we are honored to serve churches. I want to let you know just right up front, while we talk about times changing in America, how many rejoice the Word of God is going to stand for all eternity? And so we are anchored to the belief that the hope of this nation is not in a courthouse. And by the way, how many believe courts are messing up America? It's not in the state house, regardless of what state you're from. And it's not in the White House, regardless of who you vote for. How many believe it is in the church house? And the church is under attack in America in a lot of different ways that were probably just not even thought of a generation ago. Let me just jump in because it's been an interesting one. How many believe that COVID has forever changed America? You know, I have folks that say, you know, I want to go back to the way it used to be. You know, I want to go back to before we had all this. And certainly we'd all like to go backwards. How many understand we're not going back? I mean, you know, we live in a world where you used to sneeze and you'd say, God bless you. Now you sneeze, and it's like, murder, away from me, don't come at me. And, you know, we turned every parent in America into a homeschooler, and a lot of parents decided they didn't like their kids that much, right? It was a whole different dynamic. And so, you know, we're in a world where this whole public health conversation has been sprung on churches in a way that would have never even been thought of a generation ago. I mean, how many remember the old days where you don't call in, you crawl in? How many remember those good old days? I mean, the idea was, you know, if you're well enough to dial, you're well enough to get here. Now it's like, boy, if you might have been around somebody who thinks they're sick, you know, stay away. We don't want you near us. And we're in a world that is changing dramatically. Now, while we're dealing with change, how many rejoice that we don't have to be fearful, but that we indeed can adapt to the change and successfully continue to minister? We were talking before the workshop began with folks, and as I'm dealing with churches across America, we are finding that most of the churches are not dealing with government issues at this point, and they're not even dealing with mandates or local or health department concerns. How many figured out a lot of the issues are within the church at this point? And your church is polarized. I'll tell you right now, you got 10% of your people that think it's irresponsible that you've come to Cary, North Carolina, and you're at a super spreader event, and you're sitting around without a mask, and you're in a building, and you're walking around, and they think this is the epitome of irresponsibility because they just don't think you can be safe enough. Then you got 10% of your church that thinks this whole pandemic was planned and invented by Bill Gates, didn't really happen. It's all been orchestrated, and between the vaccine and 5G, they're trying to rule the world. And by the way, how many understand those 10% never get along with each other? Then you kind of got your 80% in the middle. And how many understand they're kind of like, well, preacher, what do you want to do? What do you think? And they're kind of your reasonable middle, but they're always getting chewed on by the edges. You know, you got your 10% on each end, working them a little bit. And how many understand pastoring has become more complicated in America? I mean, it used to be cleaning the building was empty the trash and vacuum the floor and make sure it smelled okay. Now it's, do we have the sanitation? Are we cleaning at the levels? Food service. How many understand we used to be able to just throw out a buffet? I mean, you know, we'd let bus families bring stuff in, right? You know, I mean, some homeless family with lice. Yeah, come on, bring it in. We'll take it. We'll eat it. You know, down at the church. Now, I had a little way I got through those events. I'll let you, when I'd get to the old homecomings, I always learned a long time ago, the pastor didn't have a clue. He'd be eating stuff that would kill you. But the pastor's wife, she was always very diligent. So I'd kind of keep an eye. If she wouldn't eat it, I wouldn't eat it. I just learned that a long time ago. She'd recognize the dishes. But we all know, right? Food service and liabilities. And if you're in child care, how many understand educating kids has become trickier? You know, what do you do to keep them safe? How do you handle these things? And so we're living in a world where there's a lot of change going on. But let me maybe just encourage you with a few thoughts. How many understand they're going to fall into standards at some point? So let me use a parallel. Go back to the early 1980s. Churches did not get sued for child abuse. Now, let me stop right here for a moment. How many, as reasonable adults, and everybody in this room would agree, that child abuse is a horrible thing? How many agree with that? Okay, so when we say not sued for it, we're all in agreement. It's horrible, it shouldn't happen, it's a reprehensible thing. No one's saying we shouldn't ignore it, and we do know churches, some in the past, have not looked at it seriously enough or handled it correctly. But what we're talking about is in the early 80s, it was deemed as an intervening criminal act. And what that means is you can't hold somebody liable for something they can't predict. So if a bad guy comes in here and shoots us, that's very sad, it's unfortunate, but it's deemed an intervening criminal act. And there would be no liability on an organization for that crime occurring. Same thing was with child abuse. Back in the early 80s, a child abuser would go to jail. If he or she had money, they would pay. But there was no liability back on the church, the charity, the nonprofit, or the employer in any manner. Well, fast forward to today, how many understand it has changed dramatically? And we now know that churches get sued all the time, and there are standards that have come forward, whether you're checking the backgrounds, whether you have rules, you're supervising your people, whether you're reporting suspicions of abuse. There's a litany of things that we now have to do. And somebody says, well, I just want to go back to the way it was before 1980. How many understand we're not going back? I mean, let's go back even a little further. How many remember in the 70s when it was legal to spank other people's kids? Matter of fact, let's turn this into a support group. How many of you were ever spanked by somebody you weren't related to? Can I see your hand, please? Yeah, okay. And the reality is that was no big deal, right? Neighbor spank, school spank. I mean, it was totally, churches could spank. It was understood that that was permissible. How many understand now if you go back and your pastor puts you in charge of the child beating ministry, how many believe you're going to have a jail ministry on the inside, right? It's not going to go well because, again, the times have changed. And so we understand whether it's child protection, whether it's now dealing with public health. Let's talk about the safety and security. You know, here on campus, certain doors have to lock, certain people are monitoring different things, and what type of response are you going to have, and how do you contact law enforcement? And we live in a world where safety and security isn't what it used to be. We've had mass shooters at houses of worship. We've had mass shooters at different events. And in today's world, we now know that making sure that things are being kept safe and that campuses are safe are changes that we have had to adjust to. Let me throw another one at you. How many remember before there was the internet? Now, Al Gore invented it for you. Okay, so I want to let you know you got him to thank for this. That's a joke. But, you know, the reality is we live in a world where, you know, when I was a young lawyer, okay, let me go back into the early 90s. So, you know, we're 30-some years ago. Okay, I come out of Duke Law School, and a pastor would call me, and it could be Brother Mike, and he'd say, you know, Dave, we got a question for you. Is it legal? And by the way, how many believe that was a good question to ask a lawyer, right? I mean, I should be able to figure that out. It's kind of, you're a lawyer, you should know the law. So the idea was, you know, is it legal? And then I would also get asked questions, you know, is it effective? Now let's talk about what effective means. I mean, that could be our other churches using it. One of the things you're here at this conference to do is see what works, right? You want to see what's working for shepherds. You want to see what's working for other churches. You want to see what's working in the workshops and seminars. And so, you know, it's common to evaluate effectiveness. Is something working somewhere else? And so that would be maybe a little outside the law, but I would get asked, you know, hey, churches that do this, does it work well? Are they happy with it? Do they have good success? And so is it legal? I'd get asked that. Is it effective? I'd get asked that. But how many understand in today's world we have a whole new conversation? And it's not just with legality or effectiveness, but how many understand the internet optics are a whole new world? You know, you get sued tomorrow, and your church is in the crosshairs, lots of litigation. How many understand it could be 5 years before the case is over? There's going to be deposits. There's going to be discovery. There's going to be insurance companies. There's going to be stuff going on. 5 years is a long time. A lawsuit will not wipe out your church. But how many understand an internet attack could wipe out your church? Because at the same time you start dealing with a lawsuit, all of a sudden 500 people start getting online, and everything you say and every video you've put out and every letter and everything is now online, and they can literally wipe you out. One of the things we get called for perpetually is churches that got basically destroyed. Their reputation and their online presence is so bad that they have to go away. They have to dissolve the church. Doesn't mean there isn't still some ministry or still some assets, but they have to rebrand to the point where they have to, you know, basically kill the entity and start over with something new. And the online world moves quicker than most church leaders can even begin to fathom. How information moves, how people can turn and start to generate things, it is kind of wild. And we all got pushed into the internet a little more. How many understand COVID put everybody into online services, more outreach, more social media? And I'm not opposed to it, but how many understand it's a wild world out there? And we're also in a world, just to give you a little thought, you know, times have changed. How many understand there's more censorship going on out there? You know, at the same time, they've pushed the churches into more internet reliance, more internet exposure, more internet use. How many also believe they're censoring a lot more what's out on the internet? And how many see a day where they could push us back a little bit? Like, oh, yeah, Clayton, you can be on the internet, just can't mention Jesus. You know, oh, you can be on the internet, you just can't take controversial positions. You know, because, you know, we Facebook Live, we own it, we're Facebook, and we don't like that. Or Google, you know, imagine a world where you Google search all the churches in Cary, North Carolina, and Shepherd's doesn't show up. You say, wait a minute, Shepherd's would be one of the bigger churches in Cary. Why would it not show up in just a general search? Well, it's not on the approved list. And how many believe we are living in an interesting times have changed? When you start looking at how do we navigate these things, how do we move through these things, liabilities have changed dramatically. We're living in a world where it used to be, if you were going to get sued, you would have to have generally physically done something to somebody. Okay, obviously abuse, that's a horrible thing, car accident, physical injury, some type of battery and assault. But how many understand we now live in a world where there's lots of emotional only injuries? Harassment. You hurt my feelings. You pressured me. You bullied me. And these are the words that are out there now, and you're not recognizing me for who I am, and I didn't feel warmly greeted. And while all of that used to be left into what we call the land of hurt feelings, how many understand a lot of that's moving to the courthouse, where people are now wanting to assert that they are entitled to not have their feelings hurt? And how many believe that is a slippery slope? You know, I mean, I'll use an easy one. You put a church secretary up in the front. You know, you walk in. Years ago, you used to be able to say, boy, that's a pretty dress. And that was a compliment. You were being a nice person just to be pleasant, right? You were recognizing that they were dressed nicely and it was pretty. How many understand you say that same sentence today, and now it's like, well, why are you looking at me? Well, I'm overweight. Are you fat shaming me? Well, are you looking at me because you are trying to hit on me? I thought you were. And how many understand we now live in a world where just even a simple comment can change the whole dynamic. Well, I hate this dress. I don't know. You're probably saying that because you hate it too, and you're hurting my feelings. And we live in a world where commenting on people's appearance, commenting on what they're wearing is all now, you know, we're being trained. You got to move to, you know, just talk about their performance. You know, I appreciate you being so friendly when I walk in. I guess that's what you can say now. You can't comment on how they look because we live in that world. And how many understand, gentlemen, times are changing. Now, let me give you a couple of thoughts, and then I'll go open forum with y'all from the floor. There are churches that are responding different ways, okay? There are some churches, and I don't think the churches here are doing this, but let me just tell you what some churches are doing. They're just digging in, and they're just fighting everything, right? I mean, we just oppose every change, and they're what I'd call the bad attitude boys. And by the way, how many believe there are some bad attitude boys out there? And by the way, they get media attention because their attitude's so bad, they're kind of like a freak show, right? So you kind of, you know, the goofy things get you attention, right? If you go in and say, let's be reasonable, let's operate kindly, that's kind of boring. If you're like, you know, you show up at our church with a mask and we'll shoot you, I understand that might get you on TV, right? It's kind of radical. Like, wow, this place is crazy. You know, these people do crazy things, you know, pretty violent. You know, and so the more bombastic, but they just fight everything. How many understand, number one, how many believe that's not necessarily the right way to do it? You know, that you're battling the culture, but you're going about it the wrong way. And I've always encouraged churches, if you're going to be successful, you got to evaluate your culture. We tell this to missionaries. We tell this to others. You evaluate your culture. But then as you try to reach your culture, you got to do three things. Number one, you got to make sure you're right. And by the way, how many believe right will always line up with the Word of God? You know, be careful. Get your facts straight. Get your information straight. Make sure before you take a stand, you know, if you're going to stand up and, you know, tell everybody to take a double dose of ivermectin, how many believe you ought to at least have your information right, right? I mean, you know, don't get everybody sick. Don't lead them down a path. Make sure you got things in a way where your information is right. And by the way, I get a lot of this in employment cases. You know, I'll have an old boy call me, and he'll be like, got fired today. It's like, oh, that's not good. What happened? I was witnessing for Jesus, but they fired me. Now, how many believe that doesn't sound very good? I'll say, well, number one, can I get the paperwork? Now, how many understand there's a lot of good evangelical Christians in the world that will lie? How many know that fact? Okay, you deal with them, all right? So, you know, the paperwork, he's going to say to me, David, the paperwork is going to say that I was late 32 days in a row. And on the day my boss was firing me, I told him he needed Jesus. And that's what the paperwork is going to say. How many understand he didn't get fired for witnessing? He got fired for being late. You know, that's the world we live in. Okay, so make sure you get your facts straight, your information straight. If you're going to deal with the situation, make sure you take the right stand. But number two, you got to do it the right way. And how many believe, like even in the churches, we've gotten ourselves off track at times? How many believe we can get over-involved in politics? We can get over-involved in social things. We can get over-involved in a lot of things. And how many figured out, regardless of who sits in the White House, how many believe America continues to change? And we can prefer candidates. We can like people. I mean, I remember when Donald Trump was running back in 16, and all I said was, you ought to vote. I just said, vote. You know, be vote. And I had people griping at me. Oh, my goodness. Ah, can you believe, you know, between Hillary and Trump, they're both, you know, ungodly, reprobates, TV, you know, horrible. You're sleeping with a porn star, all the bad stuff. And all I said was vote. I didn't say I like any of these people. I just said vote, you know. Lesser of evil, or worser of evil wins. Well, then, big surprise, kind of to most people, Trump won. And did you ever notice how a lot of Christians in America acted like we elected Jesus? I mean, it was like, wow, you know, I mean, I think I'm still Donald Trump. I don't know, you know, last time I checked, it's same guy. But, you know, and a lot of people in the church, how many understand it's real easy to get their trust in a lot of different things? Well, this network or this commentator, that commentator. And as church leaders, how many believe it's important that we not just take the right stand, but we've got to do it the right way? But then the third thing, and this is the tough one, we got to do it with the right spirit. And how many believe spirit is your testimony? Okay? Because you're always going to get pushed. I mean, right now, you know, in your church, do you get vaccinated or not? How many believe that's controversial in some churches? Okay? And I'll give you a little philosophy. Okay? Hear me out. There are morons in your church that are vaccinated. And there are morons in your church that are not vaccinated. And there's some really nice people in your church that are vaccinated. And there's some really nice people in your church that are not vaccinated. How many of you just figured out the point? Whether you're a moron or not does not depend on whether you're vaccinated or not. And you know, and when you try to be like in that like middle of the road position, how many believe the spirit can change and be different? But if you go dogmatic either way, how many believe ultimately that limits your ministry? And you can certainly be kind. I mean, I have pastors here that, you know, they get vaccinated and other people in our church feel uncomfortable. Then there's churches where most people are vaccinated. Pastor may feel uncomfortable. How many believe it's a personal decision where people can make these choices and decide what they believe is best? But as we look at this, how many understand the spirit is everything? If you come in and make your church, well, if you're going to go get, you know, the Fauci, we don't want you around here, well, you're going to send a wrong signal, right? Or if you're like, if you're, you know, getting vaccinated and or not getting vaccinated, putting us all at risk, what kind of reprobate are you? And the tone gets off very quickly. I was with a group of independent Baptists, and so I said, you know, you guys are lucky. You're independent. You got a choice. You can go Southern Baptist, and you can push for vaccines, or you can go Health and Wellness Pentecostal and be against it. So that's part of being independent. They were all tortured. They didn't know what to do. You know, it's like, whoa, yeah, you messed with my head. I didn't realize I had all these choices. But how many believe we ought to be able to let our moderation or our spirit be known? And so looking at these issues wisely and making sure that we're not just fighting everything. But then let me tell you what some other churches are doing. Okay, and this one might be a little more challenge to the group here. Some churches are ignoring the changes. And they're operating with a, oh man, it's scary, I don't like it. And yeah, there's this tidal wave of liability and yeah, child abuse protection. Oh man, there's a lot of stuff coming, but I just hope it doesn't hit our church. And they kind of march along with, I wouldn't say the head is buried in the sand because you know it's out there. But it's kind of like taking a sip of water off the fire hose. How many have ever felt a little overwhelmed? It's like, man, it's just coming at me every direction. And I do want to warn you that if you don't proactively take a look at all of these different changes in society, how many understand it will ultimately wipe out your church? You say, well, we're just going to hope for the best with our children's ministry. How many understand a child abuse lawsuit will wipe out your church? We're just going to hope for the best with our vehicles and hope, you know, those tires hold. Well, one van accident is going to kill a lot of people and you're going to wipe out your church. Well, I know we should be getting to those documents. We should be working on those bylaws. I get we probably should, but, you know, it's been around a long time and we haven't been sued. And I think, and we kind of get into, it's kind of like diet and exercise. How many understand? We all agree we should probably eat a little less, exercise a little more. But how many understand there's sometimes the temptation is just to move it down the road. Now, business has a little different incentive. Okay, business can actually, through legal and compliance and other things, actually increase profits. So if they get really good at these things, it actually shows up on their bottom line. And so they have almost a incentive to do this. The problem in the nonprofit world is running your church excellently doesn't necessarily increase your offerings. How many believe there's no correlation? Matter of fact, sometimes when you do things excellently, you upset people. And so you actually can hurt your offerings. But how many believe in stewardship? The survival of the church is one of the most important things we need to be thinking about. And as we look at all these changes, how are we going to adjust and adapt? Let me give you one more, and then we'll do questions from the floor. How many figured out the gender definitions, the marriage and morality? That change has hit this country pretty dramatically. I mean, we are getting a lot of, you know, I was a boy, now I'm a girl, my public school recognizes my change. Are you going to recognize my change? I mean, we had a fella up in Illinois, he got a phone call from the mother, all these activist groups with him, and said, basically, you know, I was Stephanie, now I want to be Steve, and I'm going to dress like Steve, I want you to change my baptismal certificate, and I want you to go ahead and make sure that all the workers in this church, it's mostly youth workers, Wednesday night type program, all the youth workers treat and recognize, you know, Stephanie now is Steve with appropriate pronouns and other things, and, you know, if you do any gender separation, you know, he's now with the boys, you know, even though born a girl, and boy, this young pastor, I mean, he's, oh man, he's digging through the Bible, he's writing a treatise, he's getting phone calls from the newspaper, it's kind of getting all ginned up, not going well, and he was getting worked up. And he called me, he said, Brother Dave, what am I going to do? I mean, all this material, they're not going to understand the Bible. I said, look, I said, you're going at it the hard way. I said, let me tell you what will win in this culture. Don't play into their debate. And by the way, how many understand they want to get you in their debate, don't they? They want you to be, you know, homophobic or transgender discriminatory or whatever the phrase. I said, just say, we don't change baptismal certificates. Whatever you were when you got dunked, you're stuck. It's kind of like a one and done, okay? And number two, we don't allow disruptive kids in our youth group, period. That's it. Just getting disruptive. You know, changing pronouns, it's just hard to organize. Just say that. He's like, is that all I got to do? I mean, I got all the stuff I researched. I said, preach that some other time. But I said, just say you don't change it. And you know what ended up happening? The news media went away because there was no story. Disruptive kids have always gotten thrown out of church, right? And not change the baptismal certificate seemed easy. And all this stuff dissipated. The girl left the church for a little while. About 6 months went by, and the mother called and apologized and said Steve was now Stephanie again, and could she please come back to church if she would be not disruptive? And how many believe it worked? But be careful that you don't get worked into all of the directions they want to take you when you respond back. Make sure that you recognize we're not going to play into the nonsense of our culture. We're going to hold firm, but we're going to do it the right way with a right spirit. All right, the floor is open. Any questions that anybody has? Now, by the way, for those of you that came in afterwards, I gave out a card and a pen. I'll make sure everybody gets one. And then if you would like to get our ministry newsletter, you can fill out the front. I'll collect those before we go. But fire away, Brent, you're first.
Do you have a model bylaw script that churches, like our constitution bylaw, it's like 80 years old.
Okay.
And people treat it like it's the inerrant.
Yes.
Word, let me want to change it, but we need to change it.
Let me say a couple of things on bylaws. And the answer to your question, yes. Now, Let me say, before you say model bylaw, okay, everybody in this room can be different. There are some membership-driven, some elder-driven, some that have some denominational nuance. So what I'm telling you is we have a variety of models, okay, depending on the church, because it's not wise to go into an elder-run church and then try to give them membership voting bylaws. It'll blow everything up, okay, or the vice versa. Membership, they vote on everything, and now all of a sudden they don't get to do anything. You can also blow the church up. So you got to make sure that the bylaws fit the church, okay? But your point, all right, obviously the Word of God is supreme. How many believe the Bible is our ultimate authority, okay? But then now you get into church operations. You have your bylaws, okay? And these are important documents. They should be somewhere between 8 to 15 pages long, and they should deal with the important big picture policies, okay? Some basics, your statement of faith, how do you elect a pastor or a leader, who has authority, who's the board. I'm giving you just nuances. There's some things in there that are tax-exempt compliant, some things in there dispute resolution, we don't sue each other, we have arbitration, I'm a fan of that. But basically, it's your big picture policy. One item in there, we have zero tolerance for child abuse. How many believe that would be good to have in there, right? But this is not going to be your child protection policy. Okay, this is kind of the upper level. Here's how our church operates. Then underneath that, you're going to have a lot of different policies. Okay, now some of these policies might just be pastor initiated. Like, hey, here's our greeting policy. Here's our offering policy. Here's our financial policy. Now maybe it's an important financial policy. Maybe it's something that, you know, who has authority to spend more than $5,000? Well, that might need to be a board level. Okay, so they might be more important policies, less important policies. Who gets to carry a gun at church? Well, that's a policy. We better think about that. And by the way, I'm just telling you, some churches I'm in, I'm just going to duck. I'm telling you. Anything goes down, stuff's flying, right? You know, I say if you're going to be a God and guns church, at least make God first. You know what I mean? Or just call yourself a gun club with a Bible study. I don't care. But anyway, you know, the reality is you have your ultimate, your constitution, which should line up with the Word of God. Then you have a lot of different policies. And sometimes people mix and mash them. So they'll have, like, their bylaws. And they'll be like, well, we want to put in our conflict of interest policy. Well, it's 8 pages long. And they throw it in. And then they're like, we need to put our child protection policy in. And it starts to read like an act of Congress because their bylaws just keep getting mismatched. And then things get left out and things get lost. And there's different additions. But his point, if you have not updated your bylaws in the last 3 years, you are probably missing some major protections. Now, let's counsel Brent. He's going back to this church. They value their bylaws. They quote it. They look at it. It's a big deal. Okay, number two, it's been around a long time. So, you know, if you want to remain around a long time, you got to touch it softly, okay? Don't go in and break it because people will view that as like you're trying to take over, you're trying to do things, you're trying to get away with things, you're trying to pay yourself more, all the little innuendos they throw out. But the bottom line is, I would recommend that you maybe send it to us. We give you a review that says, hey, these bylaws are good, but here's some areas of improvement. Now, what have you done? You've got outside professional looking and suggesting. Okay, now all of a sudden, you have a little impetus. Then what I would suggest is you go ahead and get a group, generally on your board, but it doesn't have to be, you know, interested people. So you now have a constitutional revision committee. You know, obviously the people that are most invested will put some time in. Sometimes there'll be a lawyer in the church or CPA, somebody who's particularly interested, but let them be part of it. So then they're working with you. So when you're bringing a draft to either a membership or to a board, or you're going to actually vote on changes, that there's been some process, because people will vote for updated bylaws if they trust the process. Most people will vote not reading the document if they trust the process. But if they don't trust the process, you can hand them the Bible and they'll vote against it. Okay? So I'm just telling you. Yes, sir.
Most of our churches during this pandemic have gone either to Facebook or YouTube to put our messages on board.
Yes, sir.
Is there any red flags or you're seeing out there or our churches is something they should do or not do to protect the ministry?
Well, let's talk about Facebook and look, I'm just handing some of these out while I'm walking around with you. And I forgot you, I'll get you. Okay, you're good. But with all of that, yes, a couple of things on Facebook, and recognize that rule number one to public speaking, know your audience, right? Who's your audience? Right now, I'm with leaders. Now, they have this little recorder, So I know other people might listen to it, but basically, religious leaders, kind of an attorney-client, we're having a conversation, we can talk about things a little more succinctly. If I was to go on Fox News tonight, I'm going to understand that's a different audience. Some of you could be watching, okay? But that doesn't mean you're the audience, right? The audience is unsaved people, potentially a million or more viewers at any given moment, and random people. And so you have to be careful because you could be talking to a hostile environment. You don't want to tell them ways to sue a church. So you're dealing with a different audience. And so what churches miss when they go to Facebook, online, they miss the fact that the audience has changed, that you are now talking to a worldwide audience. Now, there are ways to limit that. Okay, so for example, you could limit the Facebook. You have to log in. You have to be approved. You know, I'm not saying you want to. I'm just saying you can limit your audience. Okay, or just accept the fact that your message is being a little broader. So what are some of the issues you get into? Defamation, libel, slander, public dissemination of other people's confidential information. Okay, so if I were to stand up and say, William here, his coworker at work is not saved, and we need to pray for him, and that guy, we're going to get him saved right now, we're going to have prayer. Well, if this was church and it's just us, that's fine. But how many understand if we're on the internet, we just changed the whole dynamic. And now we're putting out people's information, whether they're lost or saved, or whether they have COVID, or whether they have cancer. So just recognize, be careful with disseminating prayer requests and public information. That's probably the number one complaint. You know, oh, the pastor's Facebook just got quoted in my custody hearing because I had a prayer request at church to pray for my abusive husband, and the judge didn't like it that I told the pastor. You know, and the pastor's like, look, I was just praying. I wasn't trying to be a witness in a custody hearing. How many believe times have changed in America? So when you go online, be thinking about, you know, when do we cut the feed? Think maybe more Sunday morning, okay? I mean, I oftentimes say to pastors, when you put it online, you've lost control of it. Now, let me explain. You get in a big brouhaha in your town of any sort. Everything you have online, they can quote and play on TV. So, like, if you're the pastor that just got accused of molestation, and they pull up a message where you're yelling and hollering about women, how many understand that's embarrassing, right? You look bad, church looks bad, everybody looks bad, but you had it up online. So I say to a lot of churches, think about your internet strategy. What do you really need online? Okay, probably your most recent sermon, probably Sunday morning, right? Maybe a gospel presentation, and think shorter, not longer. Most people don't want 30 to 40 minute stuff anyway. So if you had a 5-minute how to come to know the Lord, or what, here's an introduction to our church. You're standing with me in a Sunday school room. Let me tell you what is Sunday school. We come together. We study the Bible. If you're interested, you could email it. You know, you give like either a little infomercial, little gospel presentation. You might have some standing videos, but then rotating stuff off. For most of y'all, after your mother and three friends have watched the video, I'm not hurting your feelings. I know it does. It's happened to mine too, right? You put them out there. It's not like these are going to just become sensational, you know, viral spinning. I mean, it was really served a purpose. Now pull it down. Okay. And just leaving them up there forever, so you get another 10 views, likes, clicks, whatever you're counting, you're putting yourself at some risk. And then you also give dissidents a whole field of stuff to go through. Okay, I'll give you one I had here locally. No names being mentioned, but there was a pastor who was borrowing some of Stephen Davies' materials, right? Okay, nothing wrong with a little borrowing. You're supposed to give some credit. This pastor might have forgot to do that, but at the end of the day, the dissidents start picking through the sermons and say, wait a minute, that matches Stephen Davies' outline, and our pastor preached on this date, and he didn't give credit, and he's a bad guy because he plagiarism and, you know, copyright violation. And I thought he prayed and gave us original content. Now, let's be honest. You know, a lot of preachers say, you know, I'll be a better preacher when Swindoll's a better preacher. We understand that. But the reality, you know, you just got all this information out there that's not helping you. So I say limit it. You know, keep it a little tighter. Keep it a little more focused. Why did we put that video up? Okay. put it up, take it down, let it serve its purpose, and be done with it. Don't leave a library up there, and then watch the public stuff that goes out, and realize you can get sued for what you say on the internet as easily as you can get sued, maybe more easily than what you get sued for standing in church. Yes, sir.
One of the popular things seems to be going on in the churches now is because the mandates, people are opting for religious exemptions.
Yep.
How do we handle that? Because I've had some people from a church.
Because it's a hot topic. The vaccines. And by the way, I'm not here. Dr. Davey is vaccinated, okay, but he doesn't promote vaccines. Other good pastors are here, not vaccinated, not here to oppose. So I'm not here to give you the war, if you will, but I'm here to kind of give you the facts, okay? I get called every day, David, they're forcing vaccinations. Let's go to court and win, okay? We will not win. All right, let me tell you what happened. All right, 1905, there's a guy by the name of Jacobson. You can Google it if you're interested. Jacobson versus Massachusetts. He was an anti-vaxxer. Did not want the smallpox vaccine. Massachusetts did not mess around in 1905. They put him in jail. Mr. Jacobson did not like this, and he challenged his incarceration all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. And in 1905, with justices that were over 120 years ago, they said uniformly that you can trump individual rights in the context of public health emergencies. Now, we can debate whether it's an emergency, we can debate all these things, but I'm just telling you, that case was archaic old law from 1905. It was irrelevant until Chief Justice Roberts picked it up, dusted it off, and has quoted it 60-some times in lots of COVID litigation, and it may be even more than that now. So I'm telling you, just a frontal challenge, can the government mandate this nonsense? Probably not. You're not going to win your case. You're going to lose because they're relying on that old precedent, okay? So, what do? Well, you are allowed to apply for exemptions. There are two. One is medical. Let me just stop here quickly. Very rarely granted. But if you have a doctor, and by the way, how many believe it ought to be like a real doctor? MD, you know, helpful, you know, I mean, maybe a doctor you've actually seen, you know, I had one guy, I reached out to a guy via email in India. He said he'd give me the script. Got ivermectin too. Yeah, I mean, okay, my point is, you know, legitimate. I mean, there are some people autoimmune, some people with lupus, other things where maybe it's older folks that just had COVID. There can be situations. Transplant people, another area, but it's narrow. Okay, medical exemption, you're bulletproof. Your employer cannot make you get vaccinated in contravention to your own individual health situation. But it's very rarely applied, okay, because of the situation. The second one, and this is what you guys are running into, the religious or conscientious objection. Okay, now, these are interesting. And I have not advertised for these. I'm not even all that excited about them, okay, but I've been getting a lot of them because what we do is we help churches and pastors like you or the churches you represent send us, like, hey, can you help this guy? You know, he's an MD, he's here at UVA, he's in my church, he's a big giver, you don't want to get vaccinated, you don't want to get fired, help! Okay, so we've been helping a lot of these people. And we're batting about 80-90%. We've had good success. The ones we haven't done as well on are flaky younger people. You know, gym workers, pretzel shop people, you know, just hourly. They don't really like the job that much anyway. You know, those people have not been doing so well. But the reality is most long-term employees, if they can say, I have a sincerely held religious belief against the vaccine, their employer has a legal duty to accommodate them. Okay, hear me carefully. Two things in that sentence. Sincerely held, okay. If you get the flu shot every year, you're probably going to lose. If you have a medical marijuana card, you're probably going to lose. If you've never been to church a day in your life, but you just found religion because you don't want the shot, you're probably going to lose. Okay? But if you're consistently a religious person, okay, you go to church, you believe, you know, the body's temple of the Holy Spirit, there's reasons why you don't consume dirt, certain things, entertainment or otherwise, you try to be a good steward of your body, you will generally be able to support that position. So when you're looking at the religious exemption, some people try to argue an abortifacient argument. Tough argument. I was talking with Mike ahead of time. A lot of people in our churches can't spell abortifacient, much less explain it. Okay, and it gets real tricky because, you know, aspirins, it's more of a Catholic argument. You know, like, I can't be connected to anything tied to abortion. Most of our people are much more bodies, temple, Holy Spirit. I religiously object. Then the employer has a duty to honor that belief, if sincere, and accommodate you. Now, here's the accommodation. And a lot of our people don't like this. You know, all right, no shot, but you have to wear a mask. You have to test weekly. Now, those are the two accommodations. And people get mad. I don't want to do that. Okay, I said, calm down. You didn't want to take the shot. You just won. Don't right now create what was a victory, turn it into a defeat. I said, first of all, the arms are going to fall off your mask. It's going to break. It's going to wear out. They're going to quit making a deal. Wear the mask for a couple weeks. Just wear it. Be quiet. Sit in your office. Do whatever. And in time, it will calm down. The weekly tests. Go do it. Okay, just get the little at home. If they make you pay for it, go to the clinic. If they tell you to go, just go weekly. After a while, they're going to get tired of it. They're going to start saying, well, just, you know, go if you have symptoms. I said, but if they accommodate you, you've won. So that's really where the religious accommodations come in. Now, I don't recommend you as pastors become the advocate. Why? It gets you in a weird spot with your people. Okay? What we've been saying is either help the people do it themselves. You can send them to us. I did give you my card, and if you didn't get it, I'll make sure you get it before you go. Send them to NCLL. Say, hey, this legal firm will help you. I'll pray for you. I'll coach you. Here's what we do, just so you know. We don't promise them anything. Okay? I mean, if the guy goes, well, might I lose my retirement? Yeah, you might. Better count the costs. I mean, we don't mince it. We just tell them straight. Well, what about it? I mean, I could get fired. Yeah, you might. Hope not. Better decide whether it's sincerely held. It's your choice. And we've had some people just decide to get the shot in the middle of it. It's their choice. We don't push them either which way. But we don't promise them, you know, oh, you're going to win and, you know, own the world if you don't do it. They got to decide for themselves. Okay, we help them write a letter. Okay, we have seen that letter do pretty good. But a lot of times the employers have the standard kick it back. And because here's what your people do. They show their letter to five of their friends, and then five of their friends send the same letter in. Now it looks like a campaign. Okay, so all of them get shot back. Okay, and the shot back will be something stupid like, we didn't see any biblical basis in your letter. And there'll be Bible verses quoted. They didn't read it. Okay, so your people get worked up. Second letter, we help them write it, but now they're quoting some court cases. Still from them, we're helping them, we're coaching them through it. That's round two. All right, rejected again, now we write a letter. This is what I call the nicer letter. We're the National Center for Life and Liberty. We represent this individual, and we think there might be some confusion here because their religious rights aren't being protected. They're sincere about beliefs, yada, yada, yada. And we do pretty well with that letter because now all of a sudden HR is like, oh, man, I got to send this to legal. Let's just run it through. Okay. But we have some dig in, you know, they get a little more obstinate. And we have the fourth letter, which is if you did any adverse employment action, we're going to sue you, we're going to own you, we're going to get legal fees, yada, yada, yada. We're going to go to war. And very rarely do we have to get to that letter. That letter has won every time. They don't want to quite push it over the edge. The only people that don't get this accommodation are lousy employees or like little hourly young people, okay? They'll just be like, look, you know, we just make pretzels. You know, you're here 5 hours a week. Go get another job, you know? And a lot of these kids are like, yeah, I don't like it anyway. You know, so I mean, they're not that. So I'm just trying to tell you the long term, we've had it in the military. We've had it in government offices, private employers. Now, is it going to continue to get worse? Yes. Is there going to be more and more pressure? Okay, yes. I was with some folks up in Screen Lake Real Life, and they said, David, you know, we got a lot of folks that don't want to get vaccinated, but none of our international team can travel. I mean, we've got to make some tough choices because, you know, if we're going to go overseas, we're going to get on these airplanes, I mean, we're going to have to, you know, maybe trust God with the shot. And so I'm telling you, depending on your ministry, depending on your situation, I think a lot of people that say they have a religious objection probably truly have a health hesitancy. They're just kind of waiting to see, you know, is this thing going to really turn into a nightmare, or is it overall helpful? And let's be honest, it is a grand experiment. I'll just be very candid. 60,000 people die of the flu every year. We were okay with that. 300,000 died of COVID. We're not okay with that. Okay. And so we have, done more, maybe overreaction as a society. I'm going to give you a little trial lawyer, and I hope this doesn't come off as a prejudice. Okay. The thing that bothers me about the vaccine, personally, is there is no ultimate liability anywhere. Okay. So if Brent gets the shot, I don't care if it's Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, or the next. Okay. Drops over dead instantaneously from the shot. Let's just make it as clean and as quick. There's not even 60 seconds of breath. The shot killed him. His family has no case. There's total immunity for all the manufacturers of the vaccine, and there's total immunity for the government, and there's total immunity for those that administer it. So the reality is if 100,000 people die or if 1 million people die, we bury our dead and there is no ultimate liability. Now, you may sit here as a dyed-in-the-wool Republican and say, bless God, we showed those trial lawyers, okay? And that's fine with me if you feel that way, okay? But here's what I'm just telling you. I always feel like a little liability creates some accountability, which might create just a little more carefulness. So it does worry me. And by the way, Donald Trump did it in his administration. Mr. Biden's continued it. So I'm not here to give you politics, but I am here to give you that this vaccine has been pushed and rushed, and there is no liability. So I say to anybody, you get the shot. It's your choice, but it's at your risk. Yes, sir?
Just follow-up questions then. Prior to all this, the big push was these HIPAA laws. I can't go to the pharmacy and use my credit card to pay for my wife's prescription.
Correct.
Now, how does HIPAA show me your vaccine card? What happened to all that?
Well, you're spot on. Let's say a couple things about HIPAA, okay? Once you get the information, you have to be careful with it. So I'm not recommending this, but if you as a church said, everybody that comes to our church has to be vaccinated, we don't care. Anti-vaxxers, they don't have any money, we don't want them. Get rid of them all. Okay, they're out. Okay, so at the end of the day, if you collect all that information, you have to treat it confidentially. Very similar to if you get peanut allergy information for Vacation Bible School, or if you have a Christian school or a preschool, you're always collecting. And by the way, financial, you get my credit card, or you get access to my checking account, or I auto-deposit into you, and you have a donor program. All of that creates either financial or medical responsibility that you have people's confidential information, and you have to handle it carefully. So that's really where it is. Now, the issue is they're asking you for it, okay? Well, if you voluntarily give it to them, you just waived all confidentiality. So if you say, David, did you do this or that? If I say, well, yeah, I did, or no, I didn't, I just gave you all the information, okay? Where HIPAA or the privacy kicks in is when you're either accidentally or on purpose distributing people's information without their permission. So this is a big push to get the people to more or less report on themselves. Any other questions? Again, I don't. Yes, sir. Fire away.
I assume then, what I've been hearing, that if we're going to do a VBS, then we need to have some priorities and procedures put in place as far as protecting the children against COVID.
All right. Yes. Let me say a couple things on VBS, but let me broad. Okay. We've recommended since the beginning of COVID a certain degree of disclaimer. Okay, and like VBS, you'd want parents to actually sign camps, other things, Christian day schools, and we can get you a copy of it, Tom. But basically, I'm nutshelling it. We realize there's this virus. We realize there's other things that could happen. We're going to do what we can to try to keep your child safe, healthy, and well, but we can't accept any responsibility if your child were to contract COVID or anything else. And by the way, how many understand COVID-19 is going to turn into COVID-20, 21, and the medical people are cringing. I'm sure we already have those things. But my point is, this is not our last worldwide virus of concern. So we're going to see more and more of this type of stuff. So basically, parents have to disclaim, and then you have to decide what you're comfortable with. Okay. So, for example, if you say, well, we think masks are good. Some people do, some people don't. Some people like it on kids, some people don't. We think we're going to require vaccines or not. Those, again, choices you can make. We're going to hold it outdoors. We're going to hold it indoors. We're going to clean this way. We're going to serve food that way. There's a lot of things that you have to kind of now start thinking about when you're starting to deal with other people's children. And then what I would recommend is you tell the parents, here's how we're going to do it. Because ultimately, then they make the decision. You say, look, we're going to put 300 kids in a room this size. Well, you can do it. You're just going to be jammed in there. Okay, well, then everybody needs to know if we're just jamming them in and we're going to give it our best shot and we don't think kids get COVID. But then if a parent sends their child, they're aware. Similar, let me use old examples. Swimming events. Okay, churches used to take kids swimming. I mean, it was a draw. Kids like to do it, take them to the lake. But, I mean, kids could drown and die, and they did. Okay, so, you know, if a parent goes, I had no idea you're taking my kids swimming, that's a huge lawsuit. The parent says, no, I knew, you know, and I said my kid could swim, and I gave permission. Then there's no lawsuit. So, and by the way, there's always this balance between fun and liability. You know, zip lines that are up high. Zip lines that are over raging alligators. I mean, it's more fun, but it's liability, right? You know, the scarier that you make it. You know, so my point is there's always that balance you have to think about. And what I would tell you is public health is now a new area that's not going away. I'll give you a little recommendation and we'll wrap it up. Create a public health committee for your church. Put some doctors on it, if you have them, nurses, medical people, health people. Not your paranoid crazies, but your people who care. And then let them look at the whole range of issues. Don't make it just COVID. Think about what would we do if we needed to call an ambulance, or what do we do, you know, where are our fire extinguishers? You know, public health, how do we handle food around here? What should be our procedures for this? And then if you have somebody come up to you and say, hey, preacher, they just came out with these new masks and they're really great. And hey, take that to the public health committee. You know, hey, preacher, masks kill people. Boy, that's terrible. Take that to the public health. You know, I mean, you're able to kind of refer it off, and you don't become the focal point, but you let them have some ownership. Times are changing. The Word of God's not going to change, but how many believe the church is the answer? So I will stay here as long as y'all want. How many learned at least one thing in this workshop? Let me see your hand. How many glad you learned it here, not at the courthouse, right? Now, a few of you gave me the cards. So if you filled out your card and you want to receive a free subscription to our newsletter, maybe just pass them to the end or give them to me before you go. And then you came in later and you did not get one and you would like one. Who's in that category? I see one there.
I got it.
And I will get these to you.
There you go, my friend.
I know, I saw that.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And I owe you one, brother. I'll get it to you. And again, I'll stay up here and answer questions or anything you all want. I don't want to keep you long, but I know you've got a busy day, and it's the start of the conference. So enjoy yourself, and we're just delighted you're here.
Thanks for listening to this session from the 2021 Shepherds 360 International Church Leaders Conference. This material is copyrighted and may not be altered or sold. For information, visit shepherds360.org.